Well, as I threatened or promised, let's see if I can better this clock. Hey, it's behaving itself. This is good. Back to Proverbs then. We started last time right there in Proverbs 1, and I would like to continue that. I won't threaten you with every time I speak with Proverbs, but I think we get a good foundation, a good beginning, and then we can look at other things along the way. It'll always be there when we get back. Proverbs chapter 2 then would be where we would pick it up today. I would call this Proverbs chapter 2, maybe chapter 3, but if then, verse 1, my son, if was not his son. If is what we choose. See, choice is right from the beginning. My son, if you, my children, if we will receive his words and store his commands inside you, paying attention to wisdom and inclining your mind toward understanding. I promise you before that I would continue, that I was reading out of the Complete Jewish Bible. I plan to continue that now and then, referring to maybe one of the other versions of the Bible. But I find the Hebrew perspective to be enlightening sometimes, sometimes a little challenging. But right from the beginning, this word, if, as I said, it points to our responsibility in choosing. God called us to make wise choices. But then he defines where that wisdom is found, what the choices are that we might choose from. So yes, if means, you know, he wants us to choose. It's an expression, oh that you would receive my words and then take them, to seize on them, store them up, treasure them up, find that they are good meat, and then pay attention like a puppy dog. You know, a puppy dog, you come up to it and its little ears prick up. That's what this word, pay attention, you know, incline your heart. Pay attention. A little puppy dog, just his ears come up and he's really attentive and he's expectant. We too, when we come to God's word, should be, we can be, we can choose to be expectant. And then these things that he gives us, we treasure them up. We store them up. We find them enlightening to our lives. And then it says to pay attention to wisdom and to reach out our minds toward understanding, reach out with our hearts. He says, yes, then again, if, verse 3, if you will call for insight, if you will raise your voice for discernment, if you will seek. In my version, it says it. The Hebrew actually implies the feminine, as wisdom is likened to an incredible lady throughout the book of Proverbs. She's an incredible lady. But other proverbs compare her to the foolish. It says the foolish woman, or the strange woman, or the fallen woman. As we get through Proverbs, we will see that in places. So there's a choice. And here, if we seek her as we would silver, search for her as for hidden treasure. Hidden treasure. How do you search for treasure? There's a beautiful passage over in Job. And I would like to take the time to go through it, talking about seeking, hunting for treasure. You know, there's an excitement in looking for hidden treasure. There's thrills, the anticipation in treasure hunting. And that's good if we're seeking God's treasures. Job chapter 28 speaks of this very clearly, and it fits so much what we're talking about here. Job in chapter 28. This is Job speaking, but it's really inspired, and it's inspiring. He begins Job chapter 28, verse 1. He says, there are mines for silver. There are places where gold is refined, iron is extracted from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Miners conquer the darkness, the things that miners do to find these treasures, the depths and the places they go to find riches. Miners conquer the darkness and dig as far as they can to the ore in the gloom and the deep darkness. You know, they didn't have a lot of technology in Job's time, but what they had, they used it to their utmost. There where they were digging in these deep darkness, this gloomy area, down where the light doesn't shine, down where no one lives, verse 4, they break open a shaft. The feet passing over the mountaintop, you know, they're just totally oblivious, it says, that anybody's down there digging for treasures. Far from people, suspended in space, they swing to and fro. They tie themselves up so they can work on the sides of the mines. While the earth is peacefully yielding bread, somewhere the ground is growing crops. But underneath it's being convulsed as if by fire. Its rocks have veins of sapphire. So not only is it full of these glowing, beautiful treasures, but man is in there tearing it up, digging through it, whatever it takes to get to these treasures. There are flecks of gold. You know, the birds of prey, the eagles with those eagle eyes, it says they don't even know where these riches are. They can't see where a miner's eyes can see. No falcon's eye has seen it. The proud beasts have never set foot on it. You know, the mighty lion that turns away for none? He's not seen the treasures that a man, that a miner, that a wise woman as well will dig out these treasures. It's not just for digging in the earth, but from digging where God makes the crops grow. The proud beasts have never set foot on it. No lion has ever passed over it. He says in verse 9, the miner attacks the flint. Doesn't matter how hard it is, overturns mountains at their roots and cuts out galleries in the rock, all the while watching for something of value. Trained his eye to know, you know, what is just waste and what is treasure. Know the difference and be able to see it in its rough and raw form, even buried in the dirt. Discern the difference. Don't pass over a rock that just looks dirty that might have treasures in it. They know because they've trained themselves to look for these deep treasures. Searching for something of value, verse 11, he dams up streams to keep them from flooding and brings what was hidden out into the light to examine it and to show it off. You know, when you get treasures, we like to show. We like to be proud of what we found, what's the fruit of our good efforts. But then it starts to get to the meat of the matter. What's the point of this whole story? Job asks, but where can wisdom be found? It's okay to dig up sapphires and gold, rubies, but where can wisdom be found? Where is the source of understanding? No one knows its value. And it can't be found in the land of the living. The deep says, you know, the deep ocean, it's not in me. The sea says, it isn't with me. It can't be obtained. You can't buy it with gold, nor can silver be weighed out to buy it. It can't be purchased with the choice gold of Ophir or with the precious onyx or sapphires. Neither gold nor glass can be compared with it. Nor can it be exchanged for a bowl of fine gold, let alone coral or crystal. For indeed the price of wisdom is far above that of pearls or rubies or whatever these treasures might be that we can lay our hands on. Where do you lay your hands on wisdom? Well, you know it when you see it. Well, we. It can't be compared with Ethiopian topaz, and it can't be valued with pure gold. So where does wisdom come from? Where is the source of understanding? inasmuch as it is hidden from the eyes of all living, the eagle eye, the mighty lion, even a man without digging deep, risking his life sometimes. It's hidden from the eyes of all living and kept secret from the birds flying around in the sky. You know, destruction and death say, we've only heard a rumor about it with our ears. Where? Verse 23 then. God understands its way. What's the path to wisdom? He knows its place. He has a place for it, just like he has a storehouse for the frost, you know, and the snow and the rain. God has a storehouse for wisdom. Mankind consider, excuse me, back to God. God knows its place. Verse 24, for he can see to the ends of the earth and view everything under heaven. When he determined the force of the wind, when he parceled out water by measure, when he made a law for the rain and cleared a path for the thunderbolts, then he saw wisdom and declared it. Yes, he set it up and searched it out, and to human beings he said, look, it's simple. If only we have ears to hear and eyes to see, some of the simplest things are the most difficult to grasp and to stay with. Look, the fear of the Lord is wisdom, and shunning evil is understanding. And so Solomon, writing in the Proverbs, talks about that, about seeking for wisdom like seeking for these treasures. I think Solomon probably had read Job's writings about treasures compared to wisdom and what it, the effort that it takes, and then the value of it. Proverbs chapter 2. In verse 4, we saw that we were seeking her and searching for her. If we do that, then, if then, in verse 5, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find knowledge of God, just as Job wrote us that story. That's a beautiful picture. That's something that even I could do. I believe that it's there for all of us. Then, yes, understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God, to have that awe, that respect for him. For from him come these desirable things. Verse 7, see, God stores up common sense for the upright. Remember back in verse 1, it said we're to store up these commands and these words. God stores them up for the upright. And God is a shield to those whose conduct is blameless. In order, God does it for a purpose. See, he gives us wisdom if we go to him, and then he provides it for us, but he also guards and shields. He stores up common sense for the upright, is a shield to those whose conduct is blameless, in order to guard the courses of justice, of his justice, that we are seeking to learn as well. Justice is what he decides, and we go and we seek his judgment. And in order to preserve the way of those faithful to him. If then, you know, we need that shield for those whose conduct is blameless. Satan is one with fiery darts. Satan's always looking out for those whom he can devour. And it's not just Satan, it's life's troubles that we need shielded from. We need protection. We need a level of safety, a level of hope. And there it is. Along with wisdom, we find that God is a shield to watch over us. Verse 9, then again, you will understand righteousness and justice and fairness and every good path. That good path is a well-trodden, a well-worn one. It's almost like it's trenches or ruts worn in from God's people walking that way since the very beginning. And so that we don't get off the path every good path. Verse 10, for wisdom will enter your heart. Knowledge will be enjoyable, delightful, desirable for us. And discretion will watch over us. Discernment will guard us. So many times in these passages, I see again, as I'd mentioned before, the patterns of four. Let's look in the last two verses, 10 and 11. There's wisdom and knowledge and discretion and discernment. But right alongside of those, in parallel, there is the entering in to our heart. There's the enjoying or the delight in it. There's God watching over us. And there's God guarding us with these things. Up a little higher. Verse 9, you will understand righteousness, justice, fairness, and every good path. And we could go on higher on as we go up. Verse 7 and 8. See, he stores up. He is a shield. He guards. He preserves. These patterns of four. You know, the biblical numbers have different purposes and teach us different things. What does it mean when God says he will send out his angels into the four corners of the heavens or to the four winds or in the four corners of the earth? You know, the earth is round and the heaven envelops. How can there be corners in these things? Well, when it speaks of four, you divide it into quarters. If you take a pie and you cut it into four pieces, you've got four corners, don't you? But those four corners are in the middle and point out to everything that's around them. And when you bring those four corners back together, then you have the whole one more time. Once more. I think there's a beautiful picture in looking at the depth of the things that God can put in these. You know, it's the majesty of God, the glory of God to hide things in the glory of his children who we are to be kings, to dig them out, to understand them. And whatever I might see, you can see more. You can see something different. I'm not giving you the all that's in Proverbs. I hope I'm whetting your appetite to see that there's riches and that wisdom is enjoyable and that the path is well worthy of seeking and staying on it. If then, do we understand, you know, there where it says in verse 10 that knowledge will be enjoyable, it's talking about the pleasant, the pleasing things in life. The things that make life, daily life, you know, of getting a little treasure, a little jewel every day in something. Find those pleasurable things and hang on to them and stay on that path of seeking them. Continuing on then in verse 12, these things that God gives, wisdom and knowledge and discretion and discernment and understanding and righteousness and justice, verse 12, they will save you from the evil way. We need saved. They will save us from the way of evil and from those who speak deceitfully. For evil does come. Bad things will happen. And it is happening. Evil and deceit are in the world from those who speak deceitfully. But it's not just that evil and deceitfulness is out there. Our own selves, our own natures, our own culture, our own history, our own blindness in certain areas can be deceitful and keep us on the wrong path. And so that's why he's encouraging us to dig deep, like searching out, like the miner under the mountain. Be willing to go where we've not gone before to find security, to be saved from that way of evil. Verse 13, there are those, then, whose way is evil, they are deceitful, who leave the paths of honesty, means they were once there. If they leave the path, they were once there. They may have been our friends or family to walk the ways of darkness, who delight in doing evil and take joy in being stubbornly deceitful. We're to delight in the good things and to take joy in these treasures. But there are those that delight and take joy on the other side. So it's not just delight and joy in life, but where we find that, where we put our values. Verse 15, from those whose tracks are twisted and whose paths are perverse. You know, there are many busy trails in life. And if we get on the good trail and stay where it's well trodden, it becomes comfortable. It's familiar. And it leads us to good ends. Every path leads somewhere, right? It goes somewhere. He's talking about those who are perverse, those whose way are twisted, those who have those attitudes. And he continues with the if-then thinking and the warnings in verse 16. They, the things that God gives, will save us from a woman who is a stranger and from a loose woman with smooth talk. This is a different kind of woman than wisdom, than God's wisdom. This is a strange woman. Some versions say the harlot or the adulteress, but she has smooth words, slippery. They slide right in. They seem easy. They might even seem appealing, but you know one thing about slippery? It's easy to fall. It's easy to get slipped in. There are many strange women, if we think about foreign religions, if we think about strange churches that have a little bit of truth, that have their own way, some appeal, but it's a slippery slope to start along. Even if they are appealing, if they speak to us, but they don't speak from the Word of God, they're certainly dangerous. Flattery and seduction, whether it's a woman herself or strange ideas, maybe it's addictions. There are so many addictions in the world that draw people in. And the thing about addiction, you know, I like my morning cup of coffee. You know, in a way, that might be an addiction. I'd like to think that if I needed to, I can do like my daddy finally did in his older years, and I'm catching up there pretty quick. I think I'm catching up to the point to where I need to trade the morning cup of coffee for just a cup of hot water. And I find I can do that. I'm beginning to do that. At work, I have my cup of coffee in the morning with my Bible study and go to work, and I put the coffee pot on with just water and drink just hot water. And after the first couple cups, I learned I could like it. I can change. But drinking that first cup of coffee, like any addiction, you know, gives relief from the moment, but it never satisfies. Addictions never satisfy the real need that God built into us that seeks whatever addiction it might be. And we all struggle with, you know, whatever it might be. We all have our challenges. I understand that. But here he's then telling us that if we seek God's wisdom and God's path, he will save us from the way of evil, even save us from these alluring, slippery, smooth-talking, whatever it might be, whatever our challenge is. Four, if we start down that route, she is one, verse 17, who abandons the ruler that she had in her youth, the guide that helped her to stay on the right way. But she abandoned it. She made a choice, and those that pursue her make a choice, forget the covenant of their God. Her house is sinking towards death. It's that slippery slope. It's descending. It's inclined. And when we're on those paths, it's depressing. Because we all in our heart and mind can see those that especially are bound by it. It's very depressing. God's ways are ways of light. But he says up above, remember, those who leave the paths of honesty and walk the ways of darkness. Her house, verse 18, is sinking toward death. Her paths lead to the dead, and none who go to her return. And that sounds like a can't, but I think as much it's a won't. I found the things that are challenging in my life or that I've tried to help others with, that many times people say, I just can't. When I say, I just can't give up that first morning cup of coffee, really, I just won't. I haven't made the decision that I am actually going to do it. My intentions might be good, but when our can'ts are really our won'ts, that's when it says they never regain the path of life. None who go to her return. It's because they won't. And how hard that is. But the hope is here. The hope is here because verse 20 says, thus you will walk on the way of good people. So it's referring back to the beginning of the chapter, talking about receiving God's words and storing his commands and looking for wisdom and digging for buried treasure and understanding the fear of God and guarding the ways of justice and clinging and claiming his shield. We do those things and we will walk on the way of good people. That if. See, if, then. Walk in the way of good people and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will live in the land. So here's four more. The upright will live in the land. The pure-hearted will remain there. But the wicked will be cut off. Amputated. Radical amputation, if you will. And the unfaithful will be rooted out of it. Pulled up by the roots. Pulled up, never to grow again. Because the treacherous, those, the wicked, the treacherous, will be amputated. You know, driving to work yesterday morning, it was wet all the way, and I go through Ashland, the first exit, and past the airport, and then up the canyon for a couple miles. And it was just wet all the way down until I got right at the Ashland Airport. And all of a sudden, it's like I had four flat tires. The car just starts, you know, just kind of doing its own thing. And it was black ice for the next 2 miles up the canyon. I'm so thankful that at least the corners, they put a little bit of gravel to where I was able to hang on. But it takes a little bit to get slowed down on black ice. But that's what it's talking about, the wicked and the unfaithful. They're treacherous. Sometimes we can't see it, but we get on that slippery slope, and the end can be really upsetting, really contrary. It says they will be uprooted. That's, you know, it's uprooted is something that's done with violence to those who are wicked, that are cut off from the land. Uprooted. It just doesn't sound like a pleasant way to get replaced. Look, holding there, let's look over in chapter 11. You see, God's words will not fail. Every word will be fulfilled in his way. But the good news out of what we're reading there, that the upright and the pure-hearted will remain, there's hope for us. But there's also an answer for those that choose to follow the slippery slope. Verse 21, Proverbs 11, again from the Complete Jewish Bible, says, depend on it. The evil will not go unpunished. God will make sure that justice is brought to bear. But the offspring of the righteous will escape. Well, we'll get to slip away, not slippery slidey away, but to escape, to not slip and fall, but to slip out unhindered, unhurt. Radical amputation, those will be cut off from the land. So part of this is we need to decide what we cut off, the if-thens. David, Psalm 101, not chapters. I was educated, I need to remember that Psalms are not chapters, they're Psalms. One by one. Psalm 101, and King David talks about this, how to make choices and follow through with how he had determined to run his life and his house. And again, like Job talking about the miner, here's what David has to say about how he will run his life. It says, Psalm 101, a psalm of David, I am singing of grace and justice. I am singing to you, Lord. I will follow the path of integrity. When will you come to me? I will run my life with a sincere heart inside my own house. That's where he had responsibility. That's where he had authority and control. He says, I will run my life inside my house with a sincere heart. I will not allow before my eyes any shameful thing. That's hard to do in the world we're in today. That is, even when we're mindful of it. He says, I hate those who act crookedly. What they do does not attract me. Deviousness will depart from me. I will not tolerate evil. If someone slanders another in secret, I will cut him off. For haughty eyes and proud hearts I cannot abide. See, he made choices not to see and hear, listen to. He says, I look to the faithful of the land so that they can be my companions. Those who live lives of integrity can be servants of mine. You know, especially my television and my computer and my email and my smartphone. Servants of mine. No deceitful person can live in my house. No liar can be my advisor. Every morning I will destroy all the wicked of the land, cutting off all evildoers from the city of the Lord or from my house, where we have our influence and our control. A couple of years ago, I had to shake my head at myself thinking about this. I was over in Klamath Falls, sitting over there with the helicopter waiting, standing by for fires, and we do a lot of sit and wait like a fireman. So some of the crew were watching a movie in the lunchroom, and I was eating my lunch, and they were watching this movie. And it's fast moving, and I think it was called The Italian Job. And what it was a group of guys who got together and figured out how to steal this safe full of like a ton of gold, a bunch of gold. And then as they were getting away with it, some of their group turned on them and stole it from them. And so the movie was about the bad guys getting the gold back from the other bad guys who were supposed to have been their friends. But I found as I watched it, if I wasn't careful, I got to sympathizing with the first bad guys. I got to feeling like, you know, they've been wronged. Like, they need to get their gold back. And the movie was put together with an intensity that I began to feel for these guys that had bombed a guy's house and stole his safe. I thought, wow. It's the world we live in. I can fall. I can have my moment of weakness. I think we all face these things. Let's move on to, I have time for the next chapter. I actually had hoped that I could get through two chapters today. You know, if I stayed with this, working on Proverbs and did two chapters every month, it'd still take me, a year and a half to get through Proverbs? So be patient with me. I won't I won't do this every time that I speak, but I find so much value, and sometimes you have to put up with the reading for a while to find the real nuggets, and I love those things. But the next time I read through, something else shines, or they tie together in a way that I never understood. So Proverbs chapter 3, this again starts out with choices, if you will, the if-thens. Choices, Proverbs 3, verse 1. My son, my child, don't forget my teaching and keep my commands in your heart. You know, to not forget means that we must at least know about them and be expected to dig into them, to stay close to them, to be working with them. Hopefully it means that we know them so that we won't forget them. But at least it means know where they are and that we go there. As one man said many years ago, he says there's, in most people's Bible, and I confess in my Bible, there's vast deserts of unexplored territory. We don't have time to get into everything all the time, but it's all there for our edification, for our training, for our instruction in righteousness. And so when you do get there, spend a little time and dig out some treasures, some rubies, some gold. Don't forget my teaching. Hang on to what you have and build on it. For they will add to you many days, years of life and peace. That sounds desirable to me. That sounds like a pleasant life. Many days and a long life, but not just a long life with a lot of suffering, but a long life of peace. And that's, again, that Hebrew word shalom. And it means much more than just lack of argument. It means completeness, a wholeness, a welfare, a health to the whole, everything about your life. That's the peace that God will add to us. This teaching of peace. When everything's in harmony, you feel like getting up in the morning when life's that way. And you're ready for a good night's sleep. Sweet sleep, we'll see a little later in this chapter. God willing, we'll get there. Verse 3 says, do not let grace and truth leave you, or mercy and faithfulness. Don't let them leave you. When it's near, hang on to it and keep them near. Bind them around your neck. I'd like to see that necktie. As you know, I wear different ties, but grace and truth, or mercy and faithfulness, what an ornament. Write them on the tablet of your heart, not on rocks, not on stone, but on the heart of flesh, the living heart. And then, remember the if then you will find favor and esteem in the sight of God and of people. Then you'll be walking in Jesus' sandals. Didn't he grow in stature and esteem? Luke chapter 2, as he grew, even as a young man, Jesus lived up to this proverb, which was part of his inspiration centuries before he was born, but certainly he was aware of it. He was the living word, Luke chapter 2. I always found it interesting how Jesus, even as a young man, developed and how he was received. He'd been there at the feast, remember, and then he stayed to talk with the elders and such at the temple. Luke 2, verse 51. So he returned with his family to Nazareth, and he was obedient to his parents. But his mother stored up all these things in her heart, considered what Jesus had been doing. And Jesus grew both in wisdom and in stature, gaining favor both with other people and with God. It doesn't mean he got big and buff, and maybe he was a big, strong man, but that's the meaning, you know, his wisdom and stature, his favor, his position of respect, that others would be willing to hear him and to respect. So we too can gain that. If then, back in Proverbs, if then. Verse 5, Proverbs 3 and verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not rely on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will level your paths. You know, like I was saying, a path has an end to it, and we usually like to stay on the path. But sometimes our routes in life are rough. We have challenges. We have rough times. But God says to stay on that, because He will level it to whatever degree we need it leveled. He will clean it out for us if we acknowledge Him. If we, you know, like it says back in Deuteronomy chapter 6, this is another heart issue. Trust in the Lord with all our heart. Back in Deuteronomy 6, the Shema, to hear, O Israel, to love the Eternal our God with all our heart and all our might and all our soul, and then to write these words on our heart. These heart issues are very meaningful to God. And when we respond, then He also responds to us. He will help to level our paths, to make our way at peace. Don't rely on our own understanding. You know, it's good to have confidence. We need to move forward in our lives with confidence. And when we have this trust, this confidence in God, then there's a comfortable peace to it. When we have confidence in God, it's a satisfied submission. We understand that we submit to Him and His will in whatever path He has leveled for us. But in confidence, there's just a peacefulness to it. But He says, don't rely on our own understanding. There's confidence in God, but a diffidence in our own judgments. A minimizing of our own understanding. And then God brings these things to pass. That is very valuable. Verse 7. Don't be conceited about your own wisdom. Don't be wise in your own eyes, but fear the Lord and turn from evil. Wise in our own eyes is a level of pride to it, and pride leads to no fear of God, as we see in the world around us today. And that's why judges can make these judgments that are so contrary to the laws of the land. The basic foundations, you know, the constitutions that they're supposed to uphold. When there's no fear of God, there's no fear about being held accountable. And pride then festers corruption. And we find then in the nation, as in, you know, it says here that if you are not wise in your own eyes, that it will bring health to your body and give strength to your bones. Where's the strength in this nation as a body of people anymore? Where's the health in our peoples? There is dis-ease because there is no longer any fear of God. People don't, you know, what we see going on in society, there's no fear of God, and so they don't fear to judge according to their own feelings, or to judge even the Constitution based on the laws, which is totally backwards. The laws are to be judged according to the Constitution. And so with us, our actions are to be judged according to God's Word, the Constitution. And how things go, then we don't judge God's Word based on how we feel about it. There's a depth of wisdom to be gained as we look into these things. I thought I had another note along with wisdom, but I don't see, or being wise in our own eyes. So let's just move. Oh, there it is. Next page. Yes. Wise in our own eyes. And let's look in a little later in the book in Proverbs chapter 26 and tie a couple of verses that help us to see what the point of this is. Proverbs chapter 26 and just verse 12. He says, "Do you see someone who thinks himself wise? There's more hope for a fool than for him." And it's just in chapter 26, it's gone several verses there talking about the fools and the hopelessness of a fool. But he says, if someone thinks himself wise, there's more hope for a fool. That's why I like to go and ask God for wisdom, for His wisdom. And beware when I think I've got it figured out. When it seems what I'm doing, you know, is right to me. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. But then let's take it one more step. It says that the guy who thinks himself wise is more hopeless than a fool. Over a couple chapters to 29. And this reminds me of the politicians, especially the season we're in, where the political wrangling is so loud and so strong. Everybody has an answer. Everybody wants somebody to listen to them. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 20. "Do you see someone too anxious to speak?" They've just got to tell their side of the story. They've just got to make their point. It says there's more hope even for a fool than for him. Not that this is a problem among us, but it's a problem that we are among, that we can see how the world is operating around us and understand it with God's insight and God's understanding and know what His answers are. Back to chapter 3. Verse 7, to fear the Lord, to turn then and to wake up, to avoid evil. You know, the fear of God, I was talking about judges having no fear of God, but the fear of God that was common in this society, I used to read a lot. Occasionally, I still read once in a while a good Western, and some of the respect, you know, that just the common cowboys would have for women and children, for the land, for doing things right, whatever it cost them. It used to be that the fear of God was common among our people, and it was what helped to keep civilization civil. And now that there is a decline in the fear of God, we see much and much, much less civility in what used to be civilization. Just an observation that we see it happening, and it's educational. Verse 9, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your income, and then your granaries will be filled and your vats overflow with new wine. You know, we like to have plenty. We like to be healthy. We like to be, you know, eating good fruits, good foods, and we like to have enough to that whatever we have, that it be enough to appreciate and enjoy our life. Honor God with our wealth means, yes, from our wealth, that we give, that we have enough. It's important that we work hard enough to have enough to give something where there's a need, where, you know, we can't give to everybody. We can't, somebody that won one of these lotteries, or maybe it was before the lottery was actually awarded. Somebody says, well, if he won $1.5 billion, he'd end poverty in America, well, or end hunger, or whatever he said. It doesn't happen. You can feed somebody a fish, but until they learn how to fish, tomorrow they go hungry again. It's good to have great and grand designs. We can help each in our own little area. And that's the way third tithe worked in the Old Testament, in biblical times. You go back and you read about the third tithe was to be saved up within your gates, in your own area, so that those who had need in the area would come themselves. You don't mail them a check. They would come and get what they needed in supplies. That's the way third tithe worked when God set it up. And usually that way, if you saved it up within your gates, when somebody was needful would come, you were there to help them. There'd be a face-to-face. Now third tithe gets to be so impersonal. It's good that people need a check. But before it was person-to-person. And there was connections made. And there was community maintained. And that's a good thing. So we need to have enough wealth to give, and give first in your own small circle. Invest, yes. Save, yes. Honor God in your investments. Honor God in your savings. Honor God in your giving. Work enough to not be a dependent. Did you think through? I did. Sometimes I'm a daydreamer. What would you do with $1.5 billion? No, I didn't buy a lottery ticket. But what would you do? You know? It's beyond my grasp, but I says, don't be silly about it. I don't need a yacht. What would I actually do? And as I thought about it, I started getting scared. It says, how would I avoid those who were out to get now? You know, the parasites, the hackers, you know, relatives you had no idea that were desperate would be coming out of the woodwork. Even those that wouldn't hinder to steal it with violence. Probably the first thing I would do, you know, as I thought about it, I need a good bodyguard. I need a good lawyer. I need a good banker. I don't know there's that many blessings in a lot of wealth. Wealth brings a lot of things, but it brings a lot of troubles. I've worked for some very wealthy men, and honestly, their lives were no happier than mine. I worked for them. But watching them in their day-to-day life, in their own homes, we all think we could do it different if it was ours. I think I'm past that foolishness. I'm so glad that somebody else has the problem of what to do with $1.5 billion or a third of it even, wherever it went to. So honor God from our wealth. Yes, have wealth, have something to give, to share. That's a blessing. God says that, you know, if he gives wealth, it comes without heartache, without problem, without all the troubles that come with it. Let's see, where are we at? Verse 9. Then your granaries will be filled. Verse 10. And your vats overflow. You know, if we honor God, it doesn't say that we'll have all the frills of life. It says we'll have what we need. The granary will have enough to eat and probably enough to sell to make sure you've got a home and to take care of those you're responsible for. The blessings were enough for health, for necessities, for comforts. He doesn't say anything about giving us enough for the vanities or the carousing, but enough. Enough is probably different for each one of us. And then different for each of us at different times in our life as we have different levels of responsibility. Verse 11, my child, to us, see, these words are to us. Don't despise the Lord's discipline. Oh, this is a meaty one, isn't it? Don't resent his reproof, for the Lord corrects those he loves, just like a father who delights in his son. And certainly there's a sermon's worth in one passage there to dig into that. Solomon didn't come up with that by himself. Yes, I believe God inspired him, but Job actually wrote about it. David wrote about it in the Psalms. Why does God discipline? Why does he reprove? It says to correct. What's the purpose of correction? What's the purpose of discipline and reproof? It's to put back to wholeness, put back to that shalom, to completeness, to return something that is damaged to health and to welfare and to enjoyment. Correction is because of love. I wish I'd learned this much better when I was a daddy of little kids. Because just as I grew up, as many of us grew up, and so I repeated some of the habits that I vowed I would never repeat that my parents did, and I corrected out of my frustration, and I chastised out of my anger. That's human, but it's ungodly. Correction is because of love. It says right here, God corrects those he loves. He puts us back to where we can be in harmony, in a wholesome relationship with him and with one another. There is a time, you know, if I'm driving along, my wife's in the passenger seat, and we've been on a long trip, and I start to doze, I hope she reaches over and slaps me. Get my attention. You know, there's time to correct immediately for the danger, whatever it takes. But then it's my choice, isn't it, whether I resent that or I appreciate that she saved us from running into a telephone pole and killing us both or whatever it might have been. You know, correction has so many levels and avenues, but to understand correction and the why before we receive it, and especially before we give it. It's a godly thing. It's because of love that we need discipline. Job in chapter 5. Let's follow the trail then, if you will. Job chapter 5. I'm going to have to move along. I'm only halfway or a third of the way through chapter 3. But here, you know, and I don't know where Job got it. Job probably heard it somewhere else. Maybe he got it out of Moses' writings. Job chapter 5 and verse 17. How happy! We want happiness. We want good life. We want enjoyment. Because when I enjoy it, it's much easier for me to spread a smile, you know, and to pass all along the good feelings. How happy the person whom God corrects. So don't despise the Eternal's discipline, or the Mighty One's, El Shaddai. Don't despise his discipline, for he wounds, but he bandages. See, that's the way God's correction works. Someday, God willing, I'll talk about correction in a bigger one, but many places in the Scriptures, God wounds, but then he bandages it up. His hands may strike, but they also heal. It's for a purpose. It's for good. It's for healing. It's because of his love. So then, no doubt, David, Psalm chapter 94. Psalm chapter 94. David was familiar with this. David probably read Job's writings. Psalm chapter 94, and verse 12. How happy. See, these all talk about happiness, and which means blessedness. It's how we want our life to be. How happy the person whom you correct, O Lord, whom you teach from your law. You give us respite from days of trouble until a pit is dug for the wicked. To correct us is a blessing. So back to Proverbs then. And let's turn on through over to Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs, and I'll find it. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 13. See, I talked about how I discipline my children. And we know what the world around us thinks about discipline. But this is still tied back to what we were reading there earlier. Proverbs 23 and verse 13. Don't withhold discipline from a child. If you beat him with a stick, he won't die. But if you beat him with a stick, you will save his soul from hell. You know, there's a right way to correct and to discipline. I'm not saying beat your kids. But God is saying very clearly that whatever it takes to get your child's attention, save him from the pathway to hell. Wow. Wow. But it's not always easy to take reproof and correction. And quite often, you know, God gives us reproof and correction through others. So let's look in Proverbs on our way back to verse chapter 3. Let's stop in chapter 9 for a moment and look a little bit about reproof and correction, because God often corrects us, yes, with circumstances, but many times through other people. He sends someone to us like Nathan to David, right? In the matter of Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. God will send somebody else, and it's not easy to take correction. But this is God's words Solomon recorded, Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 7. He who corrects a scoffer, all you get is dishonor. You get insulted. The scoffer won't appreciate it. Reproving a wicked man only gets you a blemish. You get abuse in return. If you reprove a scoffer, he will hate you. So these are things that we understand about human nature. But the rest of this verse, if you reprove a wise man, that's what we're digging into, is wisdom. If you reprove a wise man, he will love you. I've had to go back and look at some of the reproof and the correction and the discipline I've had in the past and change the way I looked at it. I can't change how I dealt with it at the time, but now to love those who are really trying to help me, like it said there earlier, to save my soul from hell, because God loves me and you. It's not easy to take correction, but if we're wise people, we will love it. We can do it. We can do it. God's correction is for restoration to harmony, so that we're fit back in the design of things the way He established and meant it to be. Well, I would love to go on, but I don't want to hasten through. I don't want to go long. I think it would be good if I would put me a mark where I ended and pick it up there next time, and we'll go on with, because there's still much to be gained there in Proverbs chapter 3, and be able to continue on into chapter 4. If we hear these things, if we apply ourselves, then, you know, it says, God says that He will level our paths and we will find peace along the way to share.